This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an Apple This Extra, number 51. This is a special edition covering the Apple keynote that occurred on September 12th, 2017. We're here to cover all the goods and the bads and the ugly on the keynotes. I am Thomas Donville, also known as Anonymous. I am here with my co-hosts here. We have a round table here, and to the right of me is Mr. Alex Hall. How you doing, Alex?
I'm great, Thomas. How are you?
Good. Thank you for asking. And then right to past that, we have Dave Nason, which is a new editorial team member, and I'm glad to see him on for the round table. How you doing, Dave?
I'm great. Thanks a million, Thomas.
No problem. I'm glad you're here. And then lastly, over here to my left is, we also have a new editorial team member, Tyler. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. It's been a good day. We got to you, all of us got to hear the Apple keynote. We got all this stuff digested. There was a lot to go through and listen on. All of us were able to listen to this at the new Steve Jobs Theater. I thought they did a great job in memory and a memorial of Steve Jobs, and it's nice that they actually have a theater on behalf of his name, because he was the man that started all this 10 years ago. So I can't believe it's been 10 years and brought a device that I don't think any of us could ever live without. So thank you, Steve Jobs. But onward with the show. I'm going to break this up in different segments. We're going to talk about the stuff that they introduced at the keynote. And we're going to start with the Apple Watch. Just kind of a basic highlight. The three biggest thing that came on with this Apple Watch is, of course, it has cellular feature with this. And it also has a 70% faster processor with a dual core. And at last, we have Siri. Yes, Siri. And so I'm going to go ahead and start with Alex, because I know Alex owns an Apple Watch Series number 2. Yep. And I would like to hear what he thinks about the Series number 3, if he's going to upgrade, and some of the things he thought about it. So, Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, so I was really glad to hear, first of all, that LTE finally came to the Apple Watch. That's going to be a huge help for a lot of people. Right now, of course, the Apple Watch requires an iPhone to be nearby. And, you know, if you're just going out somewhere real quick, or you're going for a run or a bike ride, I mean, I don't bike ride or run, but if I did, I wouldn't necessarily want to bring my phone with me. So it's really cool to have all the power of Siri and Apple Music and all your apps updating and getting text, getting and making phone calls, all the stuff, no phone required. That said, I don't think I'll be upgrading. For myself, the processor is 70% faster than the Series 2, which is good, but I find that mine is running okay, so I don't necessarily need that. I pretty much never leave my phone anywhere, so I don't really need the LTE for that. And it looks like, from what we know so far anyway, some of the big carriers, at least in the US, are going to be charging $10 a month for cell service for the watch, so that's a little bit more than I'm willing to spend for something I wouldn't use very often. Again, because my phone is there almost all the time. One thing I don't think people really caught on to, though, is that Siri is available, but because of the new processor, Siri is also now speaking with the same voice that it uses on iOS, which is great for sighted people who no longer have to look at their screen to figure out what Siri said. But for someone like me who keeps the speech rate cranked way, way, way up, VoiceOver is now not speaking Siri's responses anymore. And that's one of the things I liked on the watch, is VoiceOver spoke at my speech rate, even though it was Siri, and now Siri's going to speak at its speech rate, which I can't change. So, you know, good and bad. I will be sad to see my super fast Siri go away. I was sad when it went away in iOS 7 when they got us the new voices, and I'll be sad to see it go on the new watch. But I'll stick to mine for a while, so for the time being at least, I think I will just stay with the Series 2, the faster Siri, and no LTE for me.
And Dave, I think you own an Apple Watch, but it's the first series, right?
It is indeed, yeah. The Series 0, I've heard it called, the original. I would say I like my Apple Watch. I don't love my Apple Watch. I check the notifications, and although I play a bit of sport, I've never really got into the whole closing the rings thing. It just doesn't seem to work for me, not in technical sense, but in terms of motivation. I've never really got on a run that I really worry too much about those rings. So yeah, I like my Apple Watch, but is it worth upgrading? I'm not so sure. Cellular, I think it is an important new feature. I think there are, of no doubt, there are people who get use from it. For me, though, I'm very similar to Alex. I almost always have my phone with me. And the amount of times that I would find cellular useful isn't enough to justify paying my network carrier extra money every month. So I think on that basis, I'm out. What I would have loved to see is kind of a new design, but it looks like it's the exact same design again, the same size case, the same shape, the whole lot. And I thought maybe after a few years, it might be worth, you know, a redesign and maybe make it a bit slimmer, that kind of thing. So I think maybe next year, maybe if they do that, might be when I look to upgrade. But I'm more than likely, because you can never know with me, but I'm more than likely not going to be upgrading at this time. But I'd say it's a cool update for some people, sure.
And then Tyler, you're in the same boat as I am. We don't have an Apple Watch, and I'm curious what your thoughts is.
Well, I think the LTE is a welcome upgrade in addition to the 70% faster processor. I don't have an Apple Watch, but I've been thinking this summer I've been doing a lot of swimming, and when I'm in there, I'd be interested to know calories burned and also time, you know, and as a more basic level, simply what time it was, you know, how long I've been swimming, and simply to know the time, because I can't bring my iPhone in the water, and I can't bring like a traditional talking watch in the water either. So that's why I'm considering getting one. I'm entertaining the thought of it. I haven't made a decision yet. But one thing I'd be interested in knowing is how, with the new cellular capabilities, what it means for companionship with the iPhone. Because until now, the Apple Watch has always required the iPhone to be paired and within range to use most of its functions. Now, with LTE, you don't need the iPhone to be in range for calling and texting and updating of apps. So I'd be interested to see what the role of companionship with the iPhone is, what you can do with and what you can do without, because I assume you still need to pair the watch with the phone, but I'd be interested to know specifically what this changes. Even if I do get an Apple Watch, I'm not sure I would get the LTE one, because I don't think I'd want to be paying $10 extra a month for something like that. I'd probably just get the Wi-Fi only, but it'd be an interesting thing to see. So that's basically my first impression.
Well, you guys all have some good points and angles, and I'll give my 2 cents on it. You know, I have never been compelled to buy an Apple Watch in the first place. Simply, the biggest factor for me is because of my hearing loss, and the watch in a quiet room works just fine, but if I'm in a busy place, I can't hear at all. So I'm not going to spend $300 some and drop on a watch that I can't hear. And so that's the biggest compelling reason for me. Other than that, when I am in a quiet room, I think it's always grateful, and they expanded on the health kit on this. You know, they have these better heart rate detection now. If it senses any abnormally with your heart, it will detail you and things like that. I think if you have any type of conditions and things like that, I still think this is hands down one of the best. But the question comes back to me is, this watch, finally, I will say one good thing about the Apple Series 3 that came out is this should have been the watch that came out from day one. That's just my feeling. It should have had cell services. It should have this kind of a speed and a little bit more mature into it. So it's a nice device, but I'm also with everybody else. $10 extra a month, but it does use your same phone number, which is kind of cool. But I am not going to get one at this time. I think maybe when the Series 3 gets a little cheaper and some other series come out, I might end up getting some cheaper version just to try it. It is the same size. There's nothing new about it. So everything is pretty much ditto to Series 2, with the exception of Siri and the speed, of course, and the LTE. One last thing to note, and I'll move on. I will be honest. I don't know for a fact, but from the articles I've been reading, that when you use LTE calling on that watch, it is taking a huge hit to the battery. So that's another big concern of mine. I don't know if this is true, but some people are saying they're only getting an hour of LTE calling time on it. So if that's the case, that's not going to work at all. I can't believe that would be true, but just keep in mind, do your research and find out exactly how much battery life you get out of that. All right, well, so let's move on to the second item that was mentioned at the keynote. It was the Apple TV 4K. We finally get a 4K with the high dynamic range, HDR. They put an A10 Fusion chip, which is the same chip they put in the iPad Pro. So it's 2 times faster and 4 times faster in the graphics area. And that is pretty much it. And so I'm going to open the floor, see who owns an Apple TV, and if that's something you guys are considering upgrading to a 4K. So we'll start with Dave. What do you think, Dave?
Well, yeah, there's not a huge amount to say about the Apple TV, I think. It's 4K HDR had to happen. Anyone who's bought a new TV in the last 2 years at least has a 4K TV. So, yeah, had to happen. Obvious. Well done. But, yeah. For us, there's not really much else new to it. Or for anyone, there's not much else. You mentioned a new chip. I think if you're gaming, that's possibly useful, but Apple hasn't really got to grips with the gaming market yet. From what I'm hearing, there aren't a lot of huge games on that platform. I think maybe they should have had something like a new controller, an Apple controller or something with that as well, if they really wanted to kick off the gaming side of things. For me, I have a fourth generation Apple TV, so really this upgrade, it would only be an upgrade for 4K and HDR. And that's all I'd be adding. And I don't need those features because I can't see well enough to even notice the difference. So I won't be upgrading for that reason. I'm really looking for, you know, software updates on Apple TV, new apps, you know, some of my local TV providers to make apps for it. I'm looking for Apple to finally, please, for goodness sake, please give me Siri in Ireland on the Apple TV. I don't understand why we don't have it. So they're the kind of updates I want from Apple TV. So, you know, if you don't have a fourth gen Apple TV, if you're on a second or third generation Apple TV, yeah, I'd absolutely recommend this. But if on a fourth generation, there's no real need to upgrade for me.
And what do you think, Tyler? What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't have an Apple TV, but I think it's good and long overdue that they did go to 4K because a lot of competitors have gone that direction and it had been long rumored. So I think it's a welcome development. I'm hoping that now that they can be more involved in the apps and games market for Apple TV and make it a more fleshed out platform, as well as increase their leverage with content creators. I know there have been rumblings on and off about Apple looking to negotiate better deals with content creators for movies and TV shows and original programming. And with 4K, this brings them in line with the other industry players. So I think that's a positive development. I don't have a TV, and so I will not be getting an Apple TV 4K in the foreseeable future. But that's my initial impression.
Okay, thank you, Tyler. And now over to Alex. What do you think, buddy?
Yeah, so we have an Apple TV 4, and much like Dave said, it works well. And it does what we need it to do. And unfortunately, sorry, Dave, we do have Siri. And it's really, really nice. I love it. Not to make you feel bad there. But
yeah, rub it in.
I know. It does not make sense to me. Why does Ireland not have it? I mean, it's not like you're speaking another language even. Yeah. Oh, Apple. So anyway, the 4K is not really anything to me at all. We don't even have a 4K TV right now. That said, there was one thing that goes along with this, which is that Apple has said they will be upgrading any HD movies you've bought through iTunes to 4K quality at no additional cost. So if you happen to be someone, maybe you can't see the TV, but you're always having friends over or family, or you know, you're watching TV together, whatever it is, and they have an appreciation for 4K, then it might be worth considering, because if you have a movie library in iTunes, that is going to start turning into 4K automatically on its own here pretty soon, hopefully. We don't know when that'll start happening. But as soon as that happens, you'll have 4K there. You've got some cable, some Netflix in 4K. So it's worth considering if you're more like the content provider for other people's entertainment, even if it's not for yourself. That's definitely something. And another interesting development that we've learned since the actual keynote is that the Siri remote that you can buy for the Apple TV, presumably the 4 and now the 4K, that's actually come down in price, which is kind of nice to see. And I was also interested to notice that they haven't discontinued the Apple TV 4. It's still there. You can buy it for $149 or $199, at least as of right now, the time of this recording. But the Apple TV 4K costs $179, and those are all US dollars. So if you don't need the 4K, you can save some money, get yourself the 4, the 32 gig 4. I was a little bit surprised to see that they don't have the higher capacity option. You know, if you want 64 gigs, I think your only choice is the $199 for the Apple TV 4. I don't know what the storage capacity is on the 4K version. They never actually said, but I was just surprised to see that there's only one version of the 4K.
Are you sure about that, Alex? My impression was that it was 32 gig 4 for $149, mm-hmm. 32 gig 4K for $179, and 64 4K for $199. That
the
4K had replaced. So the old 464 was just gone. That was the impression I got from reading today, but I could be...
That would certainly make a lot more sense. That definitely would. Okay, yeah. If that's the way they've done it, that makes way more sense, and I hope you're right there, because that would be right in line with what I would have expected. I just couldn't figure out what they were doing at first.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, you know, I'm also a Apple TV fourth generation owner too, and I'm with everybody else. The speed and everything is perfect. However, I do own a 4K display, but it's a smart TV, so... Basically, I wish, and I think Apple dropped the ball. They should have put the 4K with the fourth generation. At that time, it was already available, but for some reason, they decided not to do it. And really, with these new 4K smart TVs like mine, mine's a Samsung, and the smart TV section apart has its own little OS in there, and it has... We are cable-free here, so essentially, we're cable-free. So we use Netflix, Hulu, and we have DirecTV Now, which is all internet stream. And I know that Netflix has 4K, but it has an app on the TV itself. So I can display 4K already using Netflix on the TV itself without the Apple TV. So you're going to start getting some fragmentations with the TV that you buy. It'll have its own little OS in there. I do own a Google Cast and a Roku, but hands down, Apple TV is far more robust. It isn't just a dumb little module. You can actually install apps, play games, and do things that you would typically have like an iPod Touch or something. So there is a major difference of apples and oranges. Now the question is, will I be getting it? No, just simply because our Samsung will display 4K on our Netflix and Hulu. And a lot of the contents already, the movies and things, aren't in 4K yet. So in some ways, even they released a 4K, it's still ahead of a curve because a lot of people don't have 4K yet. And obviously, if you're in a family that are all blind or low vision, you're not going to get any more out of it. So that's a big deal too. But my family still has some vision, but we don't watch television all that much. But we do watch a lot of movies. And the one thing I heard this morning, I was kind of disappointed that Disney is the only movie producer that's holding out and giving 4K away with the same price, or if you already own a Disney movie from the iTunes. So I thought that was a shame. Hopefully they'll change their thought on that. But at this time, I'm not too excited about the 4K, so I'm going to hold back. But like Dave said, if you have a second or third generation, I definitely will consider looking at the fourth generation for the price difference, not so much more for the 4K, unless you know you need it for family and stuff like that. But all right, well, let's get to the next big one. This is our third item up. This is over the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus. Yes, at last, we got to hear that just an 8, 7S, I don't know where it went. They just skipped it. They didn't explain anything, but the 8 and 8 Plus is now out. The compelling part about the 8 and 8 Plus, there isn't a whole lot new things in here. I kind of knew that it was going to be a huge difference, but there are a few things that I was pretty happy about. First of all, you got the new brand new 811 Bionic chips. So we're talking some significant speed boosts as always. There's a 6-core processor, so we have the 2 high performance that's 25% faster and a 70% faster in the efficiency chips. So that was nice to see. And one of my favorite is that it's glass on both sides again. Yes, we get to drop this. You know, they go back to the old style, how they had glass from back to back, but the glass is supposed to be 50% stronger, though. That's interesting. And also, this has now a fast charging. You have to buy a special adapter. Yeah, I know. Everybody's just sighing at this point. I am, too. I was moaning. I said, really? I got to buy a special cord for fast charging. Yes, you got to buy special cord to fast charging. What that allows you to do is that you can charge up the phone in 30 minutes up to 50% from zero. So that's pretty fast charging. And then lastly, we have the wireless charging. And I think that's probably one of the biggest thing that I was looking at was the wireless charging. So we're going to go back with Tyler. And Tyler, what is your take on the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus?
Well, I think it's a fairly incremental upgrade from the 7 and 7 Plus. They did away with the S for some reason this year and just went to 8. I think the wireless charging and A11 chip, that's welcome. But other than that, not a whole lot's changed. It still keeps the home button, still keeps Touch ID, still keeps what you'd expect from an iPhone. I have a 7. And it suits my needs, so I don't think I'm on the market to buy one. But I think it's a nice mid-range solution. One thing I will say is that with the iPhone, with what it is now, and we'll get to this later when we talk about the next, with the iPhone 10, but there's the 8 and the 10, and I'm wondering if that's going to be confusing or lead to fragmentation in the market. Because if one iPhone has a home button and Touch ID and another has gesture controls and Face ID, if that will affect how developers will develop apps, and two, how customers perceive these devices and which one will sell better, and if that will cause any confusion. So that remains to be seen. But those are my initial observations.
Okay, thank you, Tyler. And let's see, I'm going to hand this over to Alex. What is your thought? You think you're going to get one?
No. I have the iPhone 7, and as Tyler said, the 7 works really well. I don't remember who was saying this before we started recording, so sorry in advance if I steal your thunder. But we're wondering if maybe the 7S was dropped because the 8, while internally it might be pretty similar and it still has the home button, all iPhones have had the home button, really, so that's no surprise. But with the band around the edges and the glass back and all this other stuff, it does look different enough that you could make the argument that it's a new design. So the S is normally a redesign internally and externally looks very similar to the previous year's model. But with this one looking different enough, I wonder if Apple just said, well, we'll just go straight to the 8 because otherwise people are going to be really confused. No idea, probably wrong, but it could be one possible explanation, and I'm sure the internet's going to be flooded with possible explanations here for a few weeks. I was really happy to see a lot of these changes, actually. I think you could make the argument that, yes, they're incremental, but at the same time, there's not a whole lot else they could have done that they didn't do in the 10. So Bluetooth 5, that's great to see. As more devices adopt that, your Bluetooth connections will be more solid and longer range. It was good to see the camera get its customary update on the 7. See, I almost said 7S. On the 8, you've got your regular camera. On the 8 Plus, you've got your dual lens set up. So all that's the same, but the camera sensors themselves are better. That A11 chip is way better at image processing, so things are going to be faster, sharper. You've got more portrait effects, a lot of camera stuff in there. So if you know someone who's into photography, or if maybe you are, that's something to consider. So a lot of good changes in there. That A11 is really going to make things fly, probably. But for 7 owners, I'm not sure it's worth the upgrade, unless you figure that you've already paid off half, so your carrier or your Apple upgrade program will let you grab the new one anyway. Price won't change. Why not? One quick thing on the price. There's a little bit of a bump. Now instead of being $649, it starts at $699 and up that $100 for the plus-sized phone. But what that's getting you is actually more storage. Instead of starting at 32, it starts at 64. And if you up it by $100, instead of going to 128, it now goes straight up to 256. So your storage tiers are now 64 and 256 for $50 more than they used to be. So you might pay a little bit more, but again, if you have the 7 and you want to upgrade, your price difference shouldn't be very much if you're on any kind of carrier or Apple iPhone payment plan. So it might be worth considering, but not for me personally. I'd rather keep my phone and get some more use out of it first.
Well, we got two no's. Wow. Okay. Well, let me go with Dave. What do you think?
Hey, well, Alex did indeed steal my thunder.
Oh, I knew it. Sorry.
Yeah, my thinking was just last year they broke tradition last year in the sense that they didn't redesign the iPhone 7 in terms of the physical design after the 6 and the 6S. So maybe this year they wanted to make a bigger deal of the slight redesign by upgrading it to the number to an 8. But who knows? As you said, the internet will talk. The phone, I think it's the usual kind of incremental update that we've seen over recent years. You know, it's faster, the camera's better, graphics are better, all these usual internal improvements that are great. I think generally, if you upgrade year on year, you're not going to notice a huge difference. So the 7 to the 8, you're not going to notice a huge performance difference for most things. But if you have an older device, you will notice, you know, a bigger difference, of course. But a lot of people do like to upgrade every year, and this is a really cool phone. I did like the design of the old iPhone 4, which had the glass back, and yeah, I think that might be quite nice, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing one in my hand, actually, and how it looks and how it feels. And yeah, I think the wireless charging is cool. It's not an essential, but I can see it as just a bit easier just to pop your phone down on a mat and, you know, overnight or... even, you know, when you're out and about, if these things start seeing these kind of wireless mats in, I think Starbucks had them previously, but hopefully we'll start seeing them maybe on airplanes and in other restaurants and all sorts of things like that. So you can just give your phone a quick charge. That'll be really cool. So I won't be getting this phone. I probably would if the phone we are yet to speak about wasn't coming along. I may well have updated to the 8, but the other phone, the 10, is the one I'm going to want. So I'm not going to be getting an 8.
Fair enough. I guess I am an iPhone 7 user myself. I am on one of those plans that's going to be the same price no matter what. So I will definitely be doing one or the other. It's a 50-50 chance for me. What I like about it is not so much the speed bump. I mean, of course, that's always welcoming, but... I like the advanced LTE, so we're now able to do some real serious speed. Yes, you get to suck up more data faster, but I don't know why. I'm just a sucker for faster cell speed, along with the Bluetooth 5, and I'm also a wireless nuts. I am really looking forward to this, and I'm really glad to see this going to be open source. I was really shocked to hear this because I figured with Apple, everything would be proprietary, like they have their own standard. But in doing so, that means they're taking the same standards and many other devices out there, and dare I say Android, yes. So we'd be able to essentially use the same phones charged on the same mats. So, and another thing that surprised me was Apple didn't have their own wireless charging mat on sale yet. It will be out next year, but for now you'll have to get it on your own. I did a little bit of research this morning. I didn't think it was too bad. For a balcony, it was $60, and it's a 7.5 watts, so that's a better charging than your standard 5 watts that you typically plug in every night. So essentially it'll charge faster, which is nice. So I'm debating. Yes, it's incremental, but there's just enough in there compelling, because I don't know about you guys, but my family chews through those lightning cords like they were nothing, and we are buying them constantly, and maybe we're just hard on them, but man, it would be so nice just to have that wireless charging out of the way. So Great phone overall. I think you guys have a good point about the design change. Maybe that's why I went with the iPhone 8, but not a biggie for me either. So I'm debating. I will definitely get an iPhone 8, or the elephant in the room we're going to discuss is the iPhone 10. For those that are blind, I've kind of told everybody else, it's actually iPhone X. If you look at it visually, it'll have a big numeral X on it. So I think that's how they're going to get away from confusing. So when we do get the real iPhone 10, I'll actually have the 10, not the X, so we'll know the differences there. So let's get into the iPhone X. Here we go. Now, there are a number of things in here, and I will say a lot of them are the same as the iPhone 8, and that's where I got really surprised. So we still have our 64 gig and the 256 gig, which is a great bump up for all the phones. They all have fast charging. They all have the same camera, with the exception on the iPhone X will have a dual camera, and both cameras will have an optic stabilizer. I think Alex mentioned to me before, and he can correct me on this, that on the iPhone 7 Plus and even on the iPhone 8 Plus, only one of the lenses is an optical stabilizer. So that's kind of a big difference when you're dealing with photography and speed. Cameras are both the same. Otherwise, the autofocus and everything is extremely fast. Usually, I have to wait a second before the focus comes in. But and then, of course, the big one, it also does the same chips. I was surprised to see that. Everybody has the same A11 Bionic chip. Nothing's different. What is different, it is edge-to-edge screen, has a glass back-to-back, and you're going to get a little more display. You get a 5.8 display, so that's bigger than your 7 Plus or 8 Plus when in terms of display, because we have a 5.5 now on the 8 Plus, 7 Plus, but this one's going to be 5.8, so you've got more display to work with, but yet the phone is smaller than a 7 Plus or an 8 Plus, so it's in between the size. I thought that was really cool how they did that, and that makes sense. They got rid of the Touch ID at the bottom, so there's no more home button, and that's why they brought in facial recognition. Yes. This was a really, really cool thing. And yes, I know facial recognition has been around for years on your Android fanboys out there, but I'll tell you what the difference is. Those you can trick. I can put the photography up. I can put a mask up, and you can fool those. Apple did a great job of making sure this was secured. And with that, right now, believe it or not, there's a 1 in 50,000 chance to fool your Touch ID. But the facial recognition is 1 in 1,000,000. That was staggering. That blew me out of the water. I was so happy to hear this. Essentially what they're doing, I hate to get into the techie stuff, but it gets me all excited, is that they have a something called dot projector. So it projects out 30,000 different dots across your face. So it does a 3D sense of your face, and it's able to recognize things so much more details, and of course it works great in the dark, so you don't have to worry about nighttime to unlock the device. It will unlock, and it has one of those I can't remember the name of it, you guys can help me, but you have to look at the phone before it can open. So if you're looking away or if you're not paying attention, it won't unlock. But there's all sorts of new options on here, and I'll have Alex go over the accessibility. A lot of people had a lot of questions. How's his phone going to work without a home button and face recognition with some of us that have some eye conditions or things like this? So over to Alex. What is your thought on the iPhone X or 10?
All right. First of all, fair warning, just stop me if I yap too much, because I love this stuff too. So this is one of the coolest phones I've seen in a long time, so if we go more than 2 hours, just yell at me. All right, so Thomas already hit on basically how the Face ID works. It'll adapt to facial hair and hats and glasses. It doesn't care, and 1 in 1,000,000 chance that it could be fooled. All this stuff is great, and of course it's all only Apple PR at the moment. We have no real world experience yet whatsoever. So I'm personally waiting for the reviews in the hands of actual users to see exactly how well this does or doesn't work in practice. We'll see. But for people that can't see very well, I made a pun there. I did not intend that pun. That was a good one. So for people that can't see the screen or can't see where the camera is to look at it, how is this going to work? Prosthetic eyes, how are they going to work? Some of the stuff we don't really know yet. We're just going to have to figure it out as we go. But some of it we have heard. So right now, we do know that, first of all, you can turn off the option that requires you to look at the camera. This will, yes, make it a little bit less secure because someone could, in theory, take your phone, hold it up in front of you, and it would unlock, even if you're not looking at it, because you set it that way. So, yeah, possible security risk there, I guess. We'll have to see again in practice. Is it going to be worse than if you're sleeping, someone coming up and putting your finger on Touch ID? You know, how is that going to affect things? Will it require the passcode more often? We don't know. But you can turn that option off. So if you can't see to focus on the camera, no big deal. You can just turn that right off. The next thing is the home button. Of course, the home button is totally 100% gone. No more home button. The bottom of the screen is screen. The bottom of the phone is screen. That's all there is. We do know, first of all, that the side button, which is now larger, like physically larger on the new iPhone, that will act as your home button for certain things. It won't get you out of apps, but if you double press it on the lock screen, that brings up Apple Pay. If you triple click it, that's your accessibility shortcut. You press and hold it, that's Siri. You press and hold it with, I think, volume up, and that's a screenshot. So it does take the place of the home button in a lot of situations, and that's still a physical button. There's no taptic feedback or anything like there is in the iPhone 7. It's a physical button you can still press. No big deal there. The other question, though, is how do you get out of apps or bring up your app switcher? Sighted people swipe up from the bottom of the screen. How do we do it? Well, we're not entirely sure yet, but what we have heard is that there is going to be taptic feedback as you touch the screen if VoiceOver is enabled. What I take this to mean, and I could be 100% wrong, I don't know, but what I'm thinking is that as you move your finger over the screen, if you're in the area where you can start to swipe up, you'll feel the taptic engine fire. So it'll kind of be like, as you run your finger over the screen, you would feel the sensation of pressing a button, if that makes any sense. Just kind of a tactile indicator, hey, button's right here, you can swipe from right here. And when you feel that, you just slide your finger up, and then it's the same thing as it would be for a sighted user. You slide it up and pause, and that brings up your app switcher. You slide it up all the way, and that's your home screen. All that said, I don't plan to upgrade to the iPhone 10. Again, my 7 does everything I want, and the huge upgrades in the 10 are the camera and the screen. So I don't really care about those personally, especially where even if I wanted the speed increase, the same chip as in the 10 is in the 8, so no huge deal there. But it's not that I'm avoiding the upgrade because of accessibility concerns. I think Face ID is going to work fine. I think the home button, or now lack thereof, is going to be fully accessible. I'm not at all worried about that. Maybe it'll be a little bit less usable, a little bit less efficient for VoiceOver users. I don't know. Maybe it'll be better. I mean, who knows what you can do as soon as you touch an area of the screen and you can start doing gestures. I mean, that could open up a whole new set of options. No idea what's going to happen, but it doesn't worry me at all. I'm only not upgrading because I don't think I need the features that it offers. Before I finally wind down here, a couple notes on the camera real quick that I thought were interesting. Even if you don't care, maybe you know someone who's into photography that will, or who's into augmented reality. The optical image stabilization, yes, Thomas, is on both lenses, which is really good because right now the 8 Plus and 7 Plus only stabilize the smaller lens, but the zoom lens doesn't get stabilized. It doesn't make sense to me. If you're zoomed in, any kind of shaking is actually going to be more pronounced. But the 10 does stabilize both. And they're also oriented differently. Instead of being side by side, they are vertically aligned. And they're spread a little bit further apart. And I was reading, this should give the iPhone 10 a little bit better depth sensing capabilities for better augmented reality applications. And it should lead to, well, obviously better overall shots. But the vertical alignment should also get you better portrait mode shots and just allow for better photos, better AR. So some neat stuff there. as well. The front-facing camera, because it is partly supporting Touch ID. Jeez. No, it's not. Face ID. There we go. Is actually capable of portrait mode shots on its own. And that's really neat to see because it's not a dual lens camera. I'm not sure how they're doing it, but somehow they're able to let you do portrait selfies, which would be great. You know, you can better focus on your own face and your shots. All that stuff. Really cool. Better flash on the back. Really great stuff. Maybe not so great for voiceover users, but we'll find out.
Well, that's because you presented a lot of stuff there. So let's hand it over to Dave. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I'll start by saying I want this phone. as the day's gone on, I've convinced myself I will find this money. I'm clearly very vain about my iPhones because I think this thing looks and sounds gorgeous. And I think, yeah, it's going to, you know, aesthetically be a really, really nice upgrade with the glass front and back and with the edge-to-edge screen. Face ID, I'd agree with you guys. I'm not concerned about it from a security point of view or an accessibility point of view. I think Face ID is going to work pretty well. I don't think they'd have taken a risk on this if it wasn't going to be as secure, at least, as Touch ID. So I'm not too worried about that. The reliability, because, you know, when Touch ID first came out, you got more fails than you would these days in terms of, you know, it not recognizing your fingerprint and you having to type your password in. That may be the case with Face ID. We just don't know yet. As Alex said, until we have this in people's hands, we're not going to know about reliability. But here's hoping it's just as reliable and easy to use as they say it is. I know the same with the side buttons, that kind of thing. It's an adaption. You know, I think within a few months of using it, or a few weeks even of using it, I think it'll become second nature to be double tapping the double pressing the side button rather than the home button, you know. But at first, it's going to be a bit weird, but we'll get used to it. I once, actually, a few years ago, I used to jailbreak, and I had an app that let me swipe up from the bottom of the screen to close apps. And it's so good. It feels so natural to close an app just by swiping up. So I'm really, really hoping that the implementation of that for voiceover users is pretty similar to what it is for sighted users. I'm hoping that it's not a case where we have to use two or three fingers and therefore adjust the grip and hold it in the phone in another hand. That would be a poor experience. If we can just swipe up with one finger, like the or with the thumb, like sighted users, I think it's going to be great. My theory, for what it's worth, on how that kind of haptic thing that we know is involved for voiceover users is going to work, is that because it's all pretty much screen, you're going to be starting from the bottom of the screen. And I think what will happen is when you, as you swipe up, it will give you a haptic feedback when you get to the point where you're at the app switcher. Because the way this works is if you swipe up slowly and stop, you get to the app switcher. If you keep sliding beyond that, you close the app and go back to your home screen. So I think that's where the taptic's going to come in. It's going to give you a taptic feedback to say stop if you want to be on your app switcher. Keep going if you want to close the app and go back to your home screen. But again, my theory is just that. It's just what I'm thinking and kind of what I'm hoping. So yeah, I think that's all of it. I'm not as concerned as Tyler is about the developers and having to adapt to this. I don't think that's going to have a huge effect because ultimately it's the home button that's changing and how you actually just close out of an app really that's changing. So I don't think that will have a huge effect on apps, but fingers crossed it won't. And if it does, I'm sure developers will be able to adapt to it pretty easily. And as I said, I think us as users will get used to the changes. And on the whole, it looks like they've knocked it out of the park with this phone to me, to be honest. But it is very, very expensive. And the one disappointment for me was the entry level, even on this phone, is 64 gig. And I think for the price, I think they should have gone to 128 as an entry level on this one. But there you go. Mm-hmm. That's probably my one reservation. But yeah, I think it's a great phone.
That's right. It's $999 for a 64 gig phone, where I think it's $699 for a 64 gig phone on the iPhone 8. So you're talking about $300 more. So yeah. So how about you, Tyler? What do you think?
Well, I think it's, well, like Alex said, the coolest phone I've seen in a while. I think it's got some pretty awesome features. One thing I think that I was thinking about, how they have the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, two of those things. One possible explanation is, well, obviously there's the price. One, the iPhone 10 components with the OLED display and facial recognition technology is more expensive than, say, the components used in the iPhone 8. But also, Apple hinted that the ways of the iPhone 10 are the future of the iPhone and possibly of the smartphone industry at large. And so I would imagine that with the iPhone 10, they're kind of prepping and priming the user base for the type of changes like no home button and Face ID replacing Touch ID and, you know, OLED displays and everything like that. And I think doing the iPhone 8, because one of the areas where they've received criticism in the past is, for example, with the MacBook Pro, where they've taken a direction so radical from previous generations that it carries substantial risks of alienating users. Like, for example, like the MacBook Pro and the Touch Bar. They had a MacBook Pro without the Touch Bar, but it was still, you know, expensive for what it was worth, and that turned particularly pro users off. But I think with the iPhone, because they have the different things, the upside to having the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10 is that they can have, for people who either can't afford or don't want to pay for or don't want the features of the iPhone 10, they can still have the state-of-the-art chip and a better camera and faster processor and with the iPhone 8. As far as the iPhone 10, I think the answers that we've gotten so far for Face ID and accessibility are a good start. Apple has been known to adapt their technologies very well to voiceover users, and I'm hoping this will be no exception. I do still wonder how this will work with angles. So if you're holding the phone a certain way, if you're holding it, say, with your face close to the notch at the top of the screen, or if you're holding it at an angle, say, I know with Apple Pay, what I do right now with my iPhone 7, if I need to use Apple Pay, I hold my phone to the NFC reader, and then once VoiceOver starts talking, you know, acknowledging that it's picked up a signal, I authenticate the payment right there using Touch ID. So I wonder if I would need to press the side button twice to activate Apple Pay and then use the facial recognition technology, the Face ID, to authenticate it. And if I'm standing at that angle, I wonder what that would mean. I don't know if that's the role of the 3D sensing technology. I'm not an expert on 3D sensing or neural networks. That's a little bit out of my league. But I think, yeah, my iPhone 7, like I said, performs pretty well. If I learn of like a big advantage, if there's something that really makes me want an iPhone 10, I'd consider it. I would like to, when it comes out, go to an Apple store and check it out. I'm hoping that when Apple introduced Touch ID with the iPhone 5S, they had a demo app on retail units, so I could go into an Apple store, test Touch ID without actually seeing my fingerprint into the phone, just to demonstrate how it would work. And the same goes for the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar and Touch ID. So I'm hoping with the iPhone 10 that it will have a Face ID demo, so I could go into an Apple store, check out the phone, feel it, and see for myself how Face ID works in practice. Other than that, I think the only other question I'd have is with the edge-to-edge display, what would happen if I had it in my pocket and I gripped the sides of it, or somewhere near the sides? Would that activate the display? Or are there more improved algorithms for touch rejection? Those are all questions that will need to be answered and will probably be answered when the device arrives in customers' hands on November 3rd. That's my outtake.
Well, guys, I'm on the fence on this because I'm 50-50 on this because, you know, the wow factor of it always excites me. And I'm always get excited when I see something really cool. So I'm 50-50 on this on several levels. One, I do like the bigger size OLED. So that's the big factor is OLED is edge-to-edge. So that is going to be compelling. And I'm kind of excited to see what it feels like. And by second nature, I think a lot of us will have trouble adapting to it at first because I'm going to be repeatedly looking for the home button like we always do. And so it's just going to take some time to get adjusted to it. So I know that's going to be a factor. And that sleep-wake button kind of bothers me a little bit because now we've got one click, two click, three clicks. And now we got five clicks to call, initiate emergency call. So got to be very careful about your clicks when you do use that sleep-wake button a lot. You're right, the one tap to wake it up. So if you have that race to wake, which I have turned off, I hate that thing because voiceover keeps talking.
Yep. And
so you do that one finger tap and it wakes it up. I thought, well, that's pretty cool. But like Tyler, I'm not sure how the sensitivity of just grabbing it, because it's edge to edge. So if I'm just grabbing the phone normally out of my pocket, I'm obviously going to touch it. So there's a lot more questions than answer, but I have no doubt that Apple will make this very accessible. I have no doubt about it. A lot of questions about the Face ID. I think we all can say the same on that one. I get that. I do like that it has some sort of a neural chip in it that's supposed to be like an AI that will over time adjust to you, so you don't have to, as you age or if you grow a beard, well, if you put glasses on, change hair, it's going to still know it's you. And I really love the fact that they actually took somebody from Hollywood, special effect guru, to make identical people. And they also fooled it. I don't know how it did it, but they did say if you have identical twins, it would set it off. So I thought they said it on the keynote that you can add passcode on top of that. So that'd be like an additional security there that I can think of. But overall, I like it. Yes, the price, holy smokes, $9.99. That's I'm thinking to myself, my God, are you really, Thomas? Are you really going to buy a $1,000 phone? I'm having a hard time reasoning myself with this. So I'll find out on Friday what I decide to do. One way or the other, I'm going to own it. But all right, so I'm going to – oh, one more note to add to all of this. I want to let you know that the Apple Watch, the TV, the 8 and 8 Plus, and the iPhone X will all be ready for pre-order this Friday. I think that's the 15th. However
– not the X.
The October 27th for the 10.
Yeah. The pre-order is when?
October 27.
Holy smoke. For all of them or just the X?
No, just the X.
Just the X.
So everything else is pre-order this Friday and release 22nd of September.
Yeah.
There you go. So the iPhone X, you can't pre-order until the 27th. And
October.
Did that come out in November 3rd?
Yeah. November 3rd is when it ships.
Woo! So if you...
you can wait.
I'm going to need it.
I tell you, if you're a 7 and you like the iPhone X, can't afford it, I understand. I'm thinking and I wonder if next year that the 9 or the 8S will come with those features automatically. I had wonder if you could just wait one more year that you can don't have to pay as much and you'll get the same features. That's only an assumption. I can't predict that because I know the OLED is the biggest factor of production problems. Yeah. So that's the only thing I have to say about that. But anyway, now to the floor as our last final roundup. I'm going to open up to everybody and see if you got any last minute thoughts on any of the things that you might have thought about. All right, let's hand it over to Dave. And Dave, you have anything you want to add up that you probably thought up before we end this up?
Just a couple of small things, I suppose. One, Thomas, you say $9.99 is a lot. Check out the European prices. Oh. The other thing I was going to say, I'd like to echo actually what you said. I think at the start, the whole tribute to Steve Jobs and the way they went about the whole issue and everything, I thought that came across really well, and I think they did a really good job on the whole keynote. I think it ran pretty well. The retail bit at the start was a little bit meh, but for the most part, I thought it was a good show, and it was on point, and everybody presented well, and yeah, enjoyed it, and looking forward to some new products.
Awesome. How about you, Tyler? Any last minute?
I think we have pretty much covered all I planned to say.
No problem at all. How about you, Alex?
Yeah, so the only thing that has me a little bit concerned is that, as a general rule, basically it's always, well, not always, but it's usually a good practice to sit out the very first round of anything brand new from Apple. You know, the very first Apple Watch was good, it worked, but the second one was way better. Even more of a jump than it was going from that one to the Series 3. It was just a huge difference. You know, the very first Touch ID was okay, but then version 2 came out, and it was twice as fast, and it's so good that they haven't updated it since. You know, so there's a lot of times that you see Apple come out with something new, and you're like, oh, that's awesome, I have to own it, and then you see them come out with version 2 of the new shiny thing, and you're like, okay, that's way so much better, I should have waited. So if I'm going to get a new phone, I really do love the idea of the 10. The edge-to-edge display, just the beauty of the display itself, the idea of just having literally a slab of glass in your hand, no buttons, no nothing on the face of it, just all screen. Even though I can't see the screen, there's just something really cool about that that I love. I don't know what it is, but I'd rather wait for the 2018 version of the iPhone X so they can perfect everything, they can get everything right, they can work out the kinks. So if I'm going to upgrade to that, I really think that I'm going to try my hardest to wait until the next version and try to bypass the sales and everything that will inevitably come along as the year goes on. But waiting till the second version of anything new from Apple is generally pretty good practice.
Well, I can't disagree with that, because I remember the first Touch ID and I thought to myself, I really want it, but I skipped it. And I'm glad I did, because the second version came out and was so much faster. Yeah. But as time went on, it always improved. And I think there's no doubt there will be some quirks and glitches with this first one, because it is the first one that hasn't been into the real world yet. And so there will be some changes to that. So I have no doubt that next year will be better and things like that. So if you're a 6S to 7 owners, you know, that's up to you. I don't see a whole lot of reason why to upgrade, but it's just my 2 cents. Yes, the wireless charging is nice, but is it necessary? It just really depends. It's your personal preference. But, you know, I have to talk to my son. I say, you think about getting it? He says, no, not really. There's nothing in the 8 that I really can't say that I would want to do it. And I heard that from other people too. So, and I have to agree with them. The X though, you know, of course, both of my kids want that. They go, oh yeah, I want the X. I said, yeah, right.
Yeah, obviously the more expensive
I don't
one.
Think so. Oh, Dad can't afford all that. But one more note before I wrap it up at the Apple TV 4K, I will say is that, remember, when you do, if you've never been to 4K, you are talking about just more than just a 4K TV and a 4K Apple TV. You got to remember, you got to up your internet speed. So if you are running that 3, 5, 10 megabits, you're not going to be able to run those 4K shows. The minimum for that is 15 megabits. So if you don't have that speed, so you got to think about that, put that in your budget to up the speed if you want to do 4K. Because I know Netflix right now does, I think it requires 5 megabits for a standard high def. So it's just something to think about. But overall, prices are pretty much normal. $329 for the Apple Watch without the cellular, $399. And Apple TV is $179. And the iPhone 8, 8 Plus is $699 and $799. 64 gig and 256 gig. And then the iPhone X or 10, starting at a whopping $999. So pretty hefty prices. But anyway, thank you guys for doing this roundtable today. And I hope our listener got informed with a lot of information and a lot of their questions being answered. But all the other questions we still are waiting for, be sure to keep checking back on AppleViz. We hope to update all of our blogs and entries with all the new updates. And I'm surely we will have somebody do a demo on podcast of a box opening on these items and more details as it comes out. So that's going to do for AppleViz Extra number 51 special edition for the Apple Keynote September 12th, 2017. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Tyler, for being here with me. And let's say goodbye to our listeners, shall we? Goodbye, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Apple This Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleVis and like us on Facebook.